KYW News Radio original podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I feel like I have a lot of reason to be proud of what I've accomplished. I am. I still recognize that there's a whole ton that I don't know. I think what's gotten me through this is that, like I said, I think I'm very blessed. I think that there are higher powers that help me through this, that it's not just me. But I think it's really a good combination of like being confident in yourself and like also being humble to know what you don't know and having great support systems.
And our guest this week is Dr. Christina Lee Chung. She is the president and managing partner of the Philadelphia Phoenix. That is Philadelphia's professional ultimate frisbee team. Christina, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me today, Matt.
So first of all, tell me about the Philadelphia Phoenix. I know it's been growing. Ultimate is growing in popularity. Tell us a little bit about, for people that don't know, what the Phoenix are all about.
So the Philadelphia Phoenix, we are a men's professional ultimate frisbee team. We were technically founded in 2012 and play under, well, in 2012, we were technically the Philadelphia Spinners, and the name the Philadelphia Phoenix was adopted in 2013. So we play in the Ultimate Frisbee Association, which is an international ultimate frisbee league that spans the U.S. and Canada. We have 24 teams across the country. And we play at, our home field is at Newman University in Aston, Pennsylvania.
And this is the ultimate frisbee that I played in college, right? I've watched you guys on TV, people that have played almost pick up ultimate frisbee with their friends. That's what you guys are doing, right?
Yes. So that is ultimate frisbee that everybody kind of plays on lawns at colleges, that you maybe play in gym class now. It's a cross between soccer and football is kind of the best way that I like to describe it. So it's not disc golf. A lot of people confuse us with disc golf. So this has nothing to do with trees or a basket or anything like that. This is literally a game where you advance the disc down the field after what would technically be, I guess, called considered a kickoff. It's called the pole for us. And you advance the disc down the field just like you would in football. You establish a pivot foot. There's an end zone and you just keep running.
Now, we are recording this middle of March, and as we are recording this, I know the season's coming up for you guys, right?
Yes, our season starts. We open the season in Washington, D.C. against the D.C. Breeze on Saturday, April 26th, I believe it is. That's the Saturday. And our home opener is actually Sunday afternoon, May 4th.
What is the offseason like? How much is there a lot of turnover with the roster, or do you have a core like any professional sports franchise where you know, you're constantly managing the roster, but you've got people you're hanging on to, or is it pretty new year to year?
So traditionally we are. Most teams hold on to their core roster, and most teams have tryouts, and there is some turnover. And just like every other professional sports team, there are eras in our business and on our team. And it's interesting. This offseason has been very busy in ushering a very new era of the Philadelphia Phoenix. I think back to my tenure here during my ownership of the team, and it's funny. There have been two very distinct eras and two very distinct transitions. And the offseason before this season really has been one of those.
Was it just time, or did you guys proactively look to go into a different direction?
You know, you just know when you know some things. It's funny. I think there are a lot of, I guess, backseat coaches and GMs and things like that. And I guess doing it real time, you just kind of know when things need to be shaken up. When you have real kind of wholesale changes, you know, they're big and they shake up organizations and they create a lot of busyness, so to speak. But when the rumblings start for a while and you think, hey, I'll do these shifts. And then at some point each time, there's just usually a tectonic moment where you're kind of like, okay, it's really time to like take that pivot or take the next step or, you know, really move into the next era for the team. And that's kind of what's happened in this offseason.
And you mentioned the regular season starts the end of April, but we were talking off the air a couple weeks after this comes out. You guys have a special event to kind of, I guess, kind of introduce people to for the 2025 Phoenix?
Yeah, we're super excited about it. You know, it's still a very small emerging sports league. It's still one of those things where we're just figuring things out as they come. And one of the things that the league we've all struggled with is being able to create enough assets and inventory. Everybody plays their 12 games a season. There's always the postseason. But really to generate that interest and awareness and continue to grow the sport, we need to have more events, right? And so we've had some all-star events, things like this. And we're very fortunate that we actually signed a title sponsor We're one of the first teams to have one. And our title sponsor was really interested in showcasing the sport before the season. And so we are hosting an exhibition event against the New York Empire, who are the three-time UFA champions. And they'll be coming down on April 5th to play us in a kind of fun-style exhibition event for the community around Newman and Aston. We're actually going to combine it with the Newman University women's lacrosse team, who's playing at 1. We're playing at 6. And in the interim, we're just kind of we're going to have a great, like, fun tailgate party where we've got games and music and DJs and just fun going on. We're going to have some of the biggest names in the sport signing off autographs and teaching adults and children alike kind of the basics of Ultimate that day.
Is there admission for anyone who wants to come out?
So it'll be free for kids 13 and under, and we've partnered with the Delco Food Bank we'll be donating all the proceeds for those who are attending. I mean, we've got different category levels. I think entry starts at $10 donation for the Delco Food Bank for 13 and over. And so that's what we're going to do.
So now let's talk a little bit about your story. What was your introduction to Ultimate Frisbee?
That is actually the funniest story. So my very first introduction to Ultimate Frisbee was when I was a freshman at Amherst College. And there were these, I mean, what I thought then, kind of lunatics playing Ultimate Frisbee on the quad all the time. And most of them used to live in, like, this off-campus house called the Zoo, where, like, they would host, like, full moon parties. And at Amherst, you didn't really live in an off-campus house. So that was definitely a little bit left of center. So that was my opinion. And then my best friend started dating some guy on the Ultimate Frisbee team. And I was like, all right, whatever. And your typical, you know, crunchy liberal arts Northeast education. And I graduated and I was like, oh yeah, those are the Ultimate Frisbee guys. I don't know what they're doing, right? I never even picked up a disc. And then so on and so forth. I go to med school, and sometime during my intern year, I meet this guy in the ER. And it's funny, we start chatting, and one of our first conversations, he says to me, oh, I'm an Ultimate Frisbee player. He says to me, what I want to let you know is that I look like an emergency medicine resident, but really I identify as an Ultimate Frisbee player. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And then my next question was, you're not a vegetarian, are you? Because being a Korean, I'm very much a carnivore. And so that was kind of my introduction. I really had never been to a game before, because then I was dating this cute boy who told me, I don't know, was an Ultimate Frisbee player and an emergency medicine physician. So I started going to some games. And there's a huge community and just an absolutely amazing rec league that plays in Fairmount Park. And that's kind of my introduction. I went, and it was this amazing community, fields and fields, thousands of people playing Ultimate just for fun during the summer. It's pretty competitive for the league. And I've always been a lifelong athlete and sports fan. And so, I don't know, one day they were like, do you want to try playing? And I was like, sure. And then I was like hooked. I really only played very casually. I was never one of these people who played in college or club or really super competitive. But I definitely did my thing for a few years with my now husband. And that was my introduction to the sport.
I love the fact that it was like he was bracing you. I'm an Ultimate Frisbee player.
Exactly. That was literally almost the first thing he said to me.
So you fall in love with the sport, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty big jump from loving a sport, being passionate about it, to, hey, you know what? I'm going to go all in financially and own a team. Like, where do you take that step?
So this is actually extremely unconventional. And I have to say, I probably make a lot of unconventional decisions in my life. But so I'm actually a practicing dermatologist. And I was an associate professor of dermatology at Drexel University, which meant that I was on faculty at Hahnemann. And I started there on my residency in 2002 and never left. Thought I would go home and die one day, a professor at Hahnemann and with Drexel. And we all know what happened to the university hospital back in 2018 or so. And, you know, I had built a very well-known program that provided a different care standard for patients with organ transplants, because people had found, and the field had found that because of the immunosuppression, that these patients were dying more often of skin cancer than anything else. And so I focused my research and built a program around trying to figure out how to detect early, prevent, and treat high-risk skin cancer patients, specifically transplant recipients of color. Actually, we're in Philadelphia, so that was it was kind of my population. And so I had done that for about a decade or so. And, you know, I published papers, I spoke around the world. And then the debacle hit Hahnemann. Right. And all of our academic careers went up in flames. And I was in a 2-year purgatory period working at 2018 at a private practice just to see what it was like. You know, I'd never done it in my life. And I was like, well, you know, I should keep all doors open, see if I like this, if this is going to be my long term gig. I was entertaining job offers from different universities around the country. But because I was so academic, I really had thought that I might want to go back and be a chair at some point. And that was kind of like the beginning of the shift in medicine, where if you wanted to be a chair, many chairs were going back to get an executive MBA because you're running a mini service line, right? A mini department. And so I thought, what will I do for these 2 years? And I come from a long line of business people. And I was like, you know what? I have no idea what's going on because I'm a doctor. I was like, I've been an academic doctor for a very long time. So I thought about applying for an executive MBA program. And for years, people had been, this is like 2018, and the pro leagues, yes, there used to be another one, was founded in the early 2010s. And people had said to us all the time with these fledgling leagues, you could buy a franchise off of Craigslist for like $50 in like 2012. And people would be like, oh, it's cool. And there was always two teams in Philly. And people would always be like, oh, Christina, Jeff, like you're doctors. You could probably buy a team. And I was always like, why would we buy an ultimate frisbee team? That sounds ridiculous, right? And then I was like, and plus there's two leagues. Like that just, I don't have no business experience, but that seems pretty dumb. I was like, it seems like the chances of survival of either of them are really low. And now you're asking me to split it. And I just like literally did not think about it because I was like building my career, having kids and all this stuff during that time period. And then all of a sudden, literally out of the clear blue sky, my husband was playing on a rec league team with a player who had happened to be like helping manage the Phoenix in the summer of 2018. And we were stuck in Canada because of a storm and we were trying to get back. And my husband had asked me after, we were literally stuck in Canada for 3 days and we had to fly from Montreal to Toronto. Then we got stuck in Toronto. And on the third or fourth day, my husband finally rented a car and drove home. And instead of being like a normal person, when like you like go home and you're like, crap, I've been out of work for like 4 days. What are we doing with the kids? They missed their camp, all this stuff. He literally turns to me and says, oh, my rec league team is having a practice. Can you drop me off there? I mean, we were driving from Toronto. And I was like, sure. So he comes home that day and he comes in and he's like, oh, Mike told me that the league is looking for new owners in Philadelphia. And I was like, oh, what'd you say to him? He said, well, I got to ask Christina. Right. And so I looked at him and I was like, well, tell him to come over. And Jeff was like, what? I was like, well, I clearly have nothing to do right now. I was like, so I might as well entertain this. I'm like, one of the leagues had folded. I was like, at least there's only one league now. Like, let's hear what he has to say. It seems kind of interesting. And from there, we ended up, he kind of told me what was happening and why they were looking for new ownership. And, you know, I really was weighing my options. And I thought to myself, I mean, to make a long story short, I mean, it's already a long story, but I said to myself after listening to him and talking to some people in the league, I was like, you know what? I could like go after being as accomplished as I have been at the age of 42, 43, and I can go get an MBA and go sit in a classroom. I can give all this tuition money to like a university, a local university. I'm like, or I can just do this and learn on the job. And I think I'm pretty capable. And I was like, so I think I'm taking option B. And that's how it happened.
Was the process easy to purchase?
Yeah, it was actually pretty easy to purchase. I mean, I will say, I think that, you know, like the team this year, the league has gone through many iterations, you know, and, you know, just like any startup, you know, there's times where it's kind of like, oh, are we going to make it? And I think for them at that point, it was kind of like, okay, Philly's like a linchpin city, right? It's like the gateway and it's a huge sports city. And I think they were having ownership issues. And so, they were practically willing to give it to me. So I was like, all right, great. I'll take it. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I said, sure.
To that point, when it's yours, you guys are in power.
Yes.
Like, where did you start? Were there moments of phone calls where, hey, we need X? And you're like, yeah, that's great. What is that? Was it that much? Or did you feel pretty comfortable from the beginning, like that you were able to get your arms around it? Or was it just a complete fly by the seat of your pants at the beginning?
Oh, my God, Matt. We were two doctors. I mean, this was just like, all right. Let's just go figure it out. Like literally, thank God we had a lot of guidance because the league had been around for a while and there were a few owners that we could depend on. And honestly, you know, our GM who was a player had been in that role for 2 or 3 years. And so like the basic architecture and things he knew how to navigate. But honestly, I mean, I hope they don't get mad at me, but like everything was kind of like a hot mess. I mean, it was like 5 years into the league and like people really hadn't heard that much about it. And like I said, their ears of transition. I think the league was going through a time, now that I look back on it, around then, where they were really going from a lot of hobby owners, right, who had bought the teams for $50, and it was time to, if they were going to try and
get serious.
Get serious, they were going to have to try and figure out new ownership. You know, it's not, I mean, we still haven't gotten to like the VC point and things like that, but that's when I look back, like kind of when that whole tide of new ownership started, where it was more people who were interested in building the business at Frisbee, who weren't just like 50 years old and couldn't play anymore and just like was holding on to the last vestige of like their career and ultimate and wanting to just kind of own this team and kind of keep this thing alive. And so, I mean, like I said, thankfully, I came from a long line of business people. And I just remember my whole life, like my dad always being like, and my mom being like, marketing, 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 marketing. And I was like, well, I know one thing. No one will know about this if you don't market it. So that's kind of like what, that was like kind of my biggest focus when I first got there. It's just like, how are we going to get a city that absolutely lives and dies by their sports teams, right? How am I going to introduce a whole other absolutely amazing sport to this vibrant sports community?
Day to day, when you're focusing on the Phoenix, like I am sure there is not an average Tuesday, but for the most part, what are you doing? Is it a lot of meetings? Is it a lot of just kind of touching base, making sure that everything that's happening? Is it mostly putting out fires? How would you say the quote unquote average day breaks down for you?
I think it really depends on the week. I mean, I would say this offseason has been putting out a lot of fires, and there are a lot of fires to be putting out. I mean, it's just like any other business, especially any other startup. I mean, that's what we are. We're still in growth phase, right? And that's just the fact of the matter. I would say, you know, I hate to pat myself on the back, but I think about how far we've come in 6 years. And so my day to day now more is I have people running almost everything, but there have been times just like anybody, any owner does, where you run everything. And honestly, it is just about everything, right? It's in the preseason. It's what does tryouts look like? And we don't own our facilities, right? Like we don't have a link. We don't have a Wells Fargo Center. We're not the 76ers and be like, hey, where are we going to build our arena? It's just a matter of where, right? It's kind of like we need to find places to play. You know, we have to think about, is it a strategic location? Can we afford it? And so a lot of the offseason planning is really logistics, like where are we practicing? Where are we playing? Where are we holding our tryouts? What does tryouts look like? This season, we turned over our coaches and honestly, a lot of the players. So this is a lot about who is going to be at the helm of ultimate operations, right? So that was more chaotic for this. I would say that then we move into the on season, kind of like the preseason. And really, it's all about marketing, right? And that was kind of what I did. I did marketing and partnerships. And so marketing, I mean, anybody who knows marketing, it's like a 24/7 kind of thing when you are really gearing up toward the season. So it's getting our team in order. Who's posting? Who's creating the graphics? Who's making the content? Who's making the schedule? What is the schedule, right? Who are we signing? How are we? Oh, my God, this happened now. So now I have to juggle this. Who's fielding all the media questions? Which player is going out to film a segment for CBS? Like, you know, it's a lot of that. And it's a lot of back end kind of organization because the question, I mean, ultimately, we have to get fans to the stands. We want people to be fans of the Phoenix. And so really the day-to-day is logistics. It's then there's the ultimate operations, there's marketing, and then there's business growth. So this year I rehired my former director of marketing who helped me get kind of all this started in 2019. And now she's kind of taken over the marketing bucket because we've grown big enough where one person can't manage marketing and partnerships. And so I've moved more into the business development partnership role, which I think has been the goal for everybody on the team and in the organization for a long time. And so that's where we're at now. And honestly, even just things like IT, it's like someone has to like upload your content, right? Someone has to be working on your web store. Someone has to figure out how are people getting their tickets? What's it saying? Things like this. And so really, it's just a lot.
That being said, especially in the early days, were there moments of, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah. Oh my God, yes. yes. I mean, it's funny. I've actually shifted my focus. Thankfully, I actually have another venture going on. And it's funny, we talk all the time about like how in any startup, it doesn't matter what field it is like most people have experienced that. Like, I just don't know if we're opening our doors next year, right? And so we definitely have been there, right? And, you know, the things that are emblazoned in my brain from like, you know, when you first start something new and you're like, oh my God, like I need to figure out what the hell's going on. It's like the things that you remember are the sports leagues live and die on the fans, the ticket sales, media deals, and sponsorships. And so, you know, the first thing is viability, right? And so I would say we're less desperate about viability now, but I do say that like, you know, financial viability really has probably been the number one focus as is any startup. But I think we've done pretty well in that capacity. So it's nice to finally feel like, okay, we have a little breathing room. You know, let's see if we can take this to the next level.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Dr. Christina Lee Chung in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Dr. Christina Lee Chung. She is the managing partner of the Philadelphia Phoenix. When it comes to building a team, and you said you have a general manager who, you know, every team does, but I would imagine you're building a team of players who probably have to work a 9-to-5 job and then fit in ultimate around that. How difficult is it putting together a roster? Are there hotbeds in the area? Are you basically pulling from the Delaware Valley, or do you bring players in from other areas? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. So, you know, it's true. They all have full-time jobs. But it's funny. It's like Ultimate's like a cult, right? And so people who play Ultimate Frisbee, I mean, you love Ultimate Frisbee.
Oh, it's the passion, and they'll jump through hoops to be take a part of it. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's almost like a really special thing. You know, I think the passion in life is so important. And I think that, like, it gets you really far, and it's what changes the world, right? And it could change the world, whether you're a scientist or you're a Frisbee player or whatever. You, like, it's that passion that, like, moves humanity forward, right? And so that's what I think is one of the most striking things about the Ultimate community. So these guys, I mean, it's funny. I think back to what my husband said back then, you know, when I first met him in, like, 2003. And I think I would say that most of my players feel the same way, right? That I might be an engineer, or I might work for Tesla. I might work for the government, but I am an Ultimate Frisbee player at heart. And so these guys are just so dedicated. I mean, they're in incredible shape. I feel like they're like, I don't know, they're like Superman. Like, you would never know, like, the most nondescript, like, really nice, like, great guys at work, like, your normal professional, semi-professional job. And you have, like, no idea that, like, they're some of the most ridiculous athletes on the planet. So it is tough, because we definitely have to juggle around schedules. We have a very robust youth program, but it's tough to get coaches when the coaches have full-time jobs that are not Ultimate Frisbee. And so that definitely is one thing. And it's tough, like, not everybody gets their weekends off, right? So it's like, and then when we travel, right, we're in the East Division. We play as far down south as Raleigh, North Carolina, and we play as far north as Toronto, Canada. So it's like, we go on these trips, and these guys, I mean, they're incredible. Like I say, like, they take their afternoons off, they take their Fridays off, but it really is truly, it still is a huge passion project for a lot of everybody who's involved. In terms of where do we draw from, there are definitely hotbeds in the city. So I would say our biggest fan base corridor is down the Blue Route. When you think about, like, star high schools, you have, like, the Lower Merion, the Swarthmores, the Wissahickons, the Pensbury High Schools. Those are kind of, like, the areas where you see huge hotbeds. I mean, it's definitely expanding in concentric circles. I'd also say that, like, SLA and Masterman have always traditionally had Ultimate Frisbee teams. And so definitely pockets. It definitely is more periphery of the city, but there certainly is a huge quorum of kids and schools in the city that offer Ultimate Frisbee as well.
Does the league have a draft, or is it more territorial?
The league does not have a draft. It is more territorial. It's been fascinating to see, because as the league's grown, you know, there's only one team that buys all their players. And I think we can guess which one that one is. And I used to, like, hate it. And I still, everybody kind of hates it, that it's like, you know, they buy their players, there's no salary cap, and why do they kill everybody, right? And last year, they didn't quite do that. It was a little more equity, parity around the league. But I'll tell you, when we're starting up, there is part of me that realizes that, like, it's great to have an evil empire, right? It's great to have a team that has the best Ultimate players on the planet, right? It's great to have that narrative where everyone hates you and want to take you. It's like the Kansas City Chiefs, right? So anybody who's playing against them is everybody's favorite. But it's interesting, as we've grown so much, it's like, there are people who travel. There are teams that are bringing players in from Europe. There are teams that are bringing people in from around the country. I have a little bit of a different business philosophy, I think, than a lot of other people in the league. But it really is incredible. Like, we draw tryouts, and we draw players from New York. We draw players from definitely Maryland, D.C. I mean, there are people who travel, you know, 2.5 hours to practice in games. It's pretty interesting. It's tough. I don't want to put that burden on people. Like, I don't feel comfortable flying people in, and I don't want to put that burden on a player right now where we're at. So, but there are certain of our teams and players that do that, and I think it's a really great sign for the sport in the league.
I would think, though, if you're able to draw from all those high schools you were talking about, you're talking about building something. The best way to build it, not just from a logistics standpoint, but local people rooting for local players who are from here, probably makes a lot of the marketing easier. Guys would be willing to go to a store to sign autographs, stuff like that, and it's right down the street. Like, I would just think, for where you guys are as a league, that local angle with the roster helps a lot.
100%. We actually just signed two of probably the most up-and-coming players. It's funny, in Philly, they're definitely considered the phenoms. And like all Philadelphia sports fan, we all have a chip on our shoulder, right? And it's funny, the league never gives us any credit. I mean, I'm on the executive council, and I get it. Like, Philly's never been like, we've never been in contention. I think we won when we were the Spinners the first year, and ever since then, I mean, I bought a team that was like, oh, and I don't even know what, that won two games, like, for like 5 years in a row. We're obviously growing and getting better than that, but it's like they just don't throw us a bone. And we're always over here in Philly being like, we're still the best. We're fighting, right? We're gritty. We're going to make it. And so it's funny because they're collabing with a lot of teams to like announce players. And these are two players who played on the U20 and U24 national teams and actually won this past winter. And like I said, in Philadelphia, they're like the young phenoms. They're like the celebrities in the community. And I don't know. I hope I don't get dinged for like talking about this. But we asked them. So they said, oh, if all the teams have like, you know, big signings to collab on, right, make sure you tell league marketing so we can amplify everything, right? So this is like our biggest signing in how long, right? Like literally our coaches said, like, we would really like for both the brothers to play on the team because we feel as though this is going to – like this quorum of these guys where it's like a youth movement. Like these guys are going to be the heart of what grows Philly Ultimate and what's going to get us to a UFA championship, right? And the league's like, no. And I was like, oh, that figures, right? And so we put their post up yesterday, and I can't even tell you. I think we have more comments than like any, we have more engagement than I think just about any other signing probably in the league, except for like maybe the biggest. And so you are correct about that. Even I was surprised. I opened our Instagram page, and I was like, whoa. You know? And it's true, but it's incredible. But it also speaks to like the Philadelphia sports community. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, and there's I feel like in every city, but Philadelphia specifically is like a city of neighborhoods. It's very parochial. People want to root for somebody from their high school or somebody from their area. And I think that that's a through line in every type of sport in Philadelphia more than just about any other city.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I agree with you. I growing up, you know, you hear about those storylines all the time. So, yeah, like Mike Piazza. Shows my age, right?
What is the thing that you have grown to love the most about owning a team that you didn't think you would? Was there one aspect that you either were completely unfamiliar with or maybe dreading a little bit, but as you've gotten more comfortable and gotten more experience, it's become something you really enjoy doing or having a hand in or helping to mold?
That's a tough question. I don't dread a lot of things. You know, what's really funny is that I dreaded having to negotiate things, and I hate it, and I dreaded having to try and figure out like partnerships and sponsorships, right? Like I think as physicians, we're programmed to give, right? And we're programmed to think about others, right? And take care of them. And so I think that probably was the single biggest challenge, to have that frame shift of thinking of, I'm not trying to heal and help others. I'm trying to build something that works and has a bottom line and has a budget and has viability issues. And I need to go places and sell things. Like I need to sell tickets. I need to sell like partnerships and sponsorships. I need to negotiate all this stuff, which I'd never done before, right? So I really dreaded it. But I have to say, I think it's almost like anything in life. Like I feel like if you are being honest and you're being transparent and you're being upfront, right, and you're being realistic, it makes things like a lot easier. And really, it's a lot of relationship building, which I guess as physicians we're good at, right? Like I feel like that's what my career is built on, right? And so I feel like I'm surprised at how much I don't mind it. I'm surprised at how authenticity comes through and how people want to be part of something that's like new and exciting, right? And I think it just doubles down on my belief that if you really love, like passion, like if you really love something, you believe in something and you're wearing it authentically, people will just want to come along for the ride.
All you have to do, you're obviously completely immersed in the sport, but you have to do so many things that aren't the sport, like
right.
Aren't the competition, aren't the game. Do you still enjoy the game as much with everything you have to deal with on the periphery, you know, or has your passion for the game grown even more because of that?
Oh my God, that's actually a really good question. I have not honestly thought about that. I would probably say that I am probably so bogged down with all the other things that I hardly ever get to watch a game to watch a game, right? But I will tell you that when I do, I feel like it's probably It's hard to tell because I'm watching a game that's like either my team is going to advance or not, you know. But I feel like almost more invested. Maybe it's because, you know, the league, you have so many colleagues and you know all the owners and you know the backstories of everything. So I feel like each game that I do get to watch, right, there's always something there, right? There's a player who I've worked with on a committee, right, that I feel more invested in. And so it is. I mean, I think I appreciate the game differently than I used to.
It's 2025, like next 5 years mm-hmm. for the Phoenix and for the league, you know, at large. Mm-hmm. What are things you think we'll see? What are things you would like to see as far as growth, as far as the league taking a step forward, becoming more popular, more people becoming involved? Like, what do you see coming in the pipeline and what are kind of your dreams?
What do I see coming in the pipeline? I it's funny. I got to put the two hats on. I got to put the sport hat on and then I have to put the business hat on. So in the sport, I would love to see it grow. And I think that like the awareness of the sport has grown I mean, exponentially. I think that it's so great when you see people see it for the first time, and it doesn't matter on what sort of platform, what modality, whether it's the TV or like their kids watching our practice and you hear them talking, right? Or you're watching people scroll through on Instagram or something. I think it's really incredible, like the reaction you get. Right. You know, we've been on, you know, ESPN top 10, all these things, or SportsCenter top 10. And I really would love to see I think it'll grow a lot. And where I want to see the game go is I want to see the game not just grow in terms of fans, but participation. But I also would one of the reasons why I decided to acquire the team also is because I would like to see it played by more people in the sport. Like reach. It's not that it's not an accessible sport, right? I mean, all you need is like a frisbee. Like you can play in sneakers, barefoot, cleats, wherever. So I would like to see the sport grow to the point where, I mean, I guess it's the buzzword these days, but there's a more diverse group of people playing it, right? I know that it's played around the world. I would love to see the league and the sport grow to the point where we are, you know, the best of the best in different countries are growing. But the problem is it's hard to do all those things if there are no funds, right? And so I would love to see the league grow in terms of, I don't know how many more teams we could have, right? But I would love to see us have more games. I would love to see us have a bigger footprint. I would love to see more people at championship weekend. I would love to see more fans in the stands, not just for the business side, but just because then you realize that like people are appreciating the sport. On the business side, I would like, I see, it's funny, I see it becoming more of an actual business of sports, which is good, right? Like if the league is going to survive and the sport is going to grow and the footprint's going to grow around the world and not just for viability purposes, like you need people who understand the business of sports to come in, right? And grow the structures out, right? We have a very robust team. Like I have service lines and different people and different working in different areas of the team. You know, even our ultimate operations, we have 4 or 5 coaches. We have 3 or 4 captains, but we are probably one of the more developed teams, right? And so, and there is a little bit of disparity through the league. I would like to see that disparity kind of even out, which I think you'll see. And I think then we'll really be able to go and get everything to the next level. I would love to see a media deal. I would love to see media outlets cover Ultimate Frisbee more. I would love to see Ultimate Frisbee grow in pockets of cities and areas in the country that people have never heard of it. Right. I'd love to see more kids with discs. I would love to see it in the Olympics. We tried to do that. Or I think there was a committee at USAU that tried to do that. I would love to see it more on the world stage and really break out of its kind of like homegrown ultimate community kind of like sphere.
You do not see many women in ownership positions in sports. You do not see many Korean women in ownership positions at sports. How much pride do you feel with that? Do you feel pressure because of that, outside of just the pressure of being an owner of a professional sports team? How about it? Do you feel extra pride? Do you not think about it in those terms? Do you feel there's extra pressure?
At first I did, mostly because you have imposter syndrome. I mean, I was a doctor coming into this, right? And I'm like dealing with all these like business types, finance types. And so, yes, I would probably say I had a lot of imposter syndrome. I like challenges. I think I've always, you know, I grew up a 1970s kid, right? I grew up in with immigrant parents. I grew up in a Korean American society where I literally was an athlete and I went to church and like some elder was like, "Oh, you have muscles, girls shouldn't have arm muscles." And I was like, "Screw you." Right. And I was always told by like the Korean folks or my parents were told, oh, your daughter is not Yamjane, which means like the quiet, like really like modest, all these things. Because I've always been extremely outspoken. It's interesting. Yes, I think you always feel insecure when you're doing something different and you're like, God, can I do this? Like, are people going to think I'm dumb? Like, are they think I'm crazy? Like, how am I going to do this? Like, what have I gotten myself into? But I mean, like I said, I was 43. I was 44. I'd already done so much. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm not 100 years old, but I'm old enough to have been around the block a few times. And, you know, when I look back from my vantage point now, like, I think if you can survive, if you can get where I did in medicine and science, right? Research, not just like practicing medicine, but if you can get through med school, you can be a researcher, you can publish papers, you can be running your own like research team, you can have two kids, have a family, right? Like there's really nothing you can't do as a woman, right? And I think that maybe I didn't like couldn't crystallize that in my brain, but I think that also gives you a level of confidence and like no fear that I kind of, that I've developed over my life. I think I've always been a little bit like that. And so, yeah, I went into it wholeheartedly. My husband's been one of my biggest champions, right? It's like I was going to run this thing, right? And I was going to figure it out. So I feel like I do. I don't want to like be like puffed out like a peacock, but I do think I've learned to own the confidence, right? I feel really lucky and blessed that like I'm able to do this. I will say that I also, you know, COVID hit, you know, in 2020, and look at what happened. And ourselves as physicians, we had told everybody, like, you know, these guys aren't used to getting professional care. Like, their ultimate isn't even like a PIAA sport. Like, it's not an NCAA sport. Like, they get injured and they're just limping around until they figure they can get back on the field. So I'd been bugging the league for a while to make sure that every team had like at least a head team physician, right? And I got a lot of resistance because it was a lot of like, you know, old school ultimate people. And I said, okay, well, you guys can do what you want. I'm going to get Rothman on board. Right? Like, I'll take care of my players. I don't know what you guys are going to do, right? And so I was like, yeah. And then I literally think the commissioner at the time literally was like, you know, that is a great idea. We might be a few years out from that, right? And that was like January of 2020, right? And then we all know what happened in March of 2020. And of course, I got a phone call. Ding, 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 ding. Hey, Christina, we need to figure out how we're going to navigate COVID. Can you help us out? And I was like, sure. And no one knew what they were getting themselves into. And so they're like, hey, can you chair a COVID task force? I was like, sure. So literally I was in charge of putting together a COVID task force and figuring out how the hell to get this league through the COVID pandemic and out on the other side without falling apart. And so that was probably one of the biggest challenges of my life. I put together a rock star team, like CDC folks, like people from the Sixers helped out, people from the Phillies helped out. Like I had like a bang up team of physicians, experts, public health experts, CDC folks to help guide us through it. I had to navigate 1,000 people, more than 1,000 people who had all sorts of differing beliefs about like vaccinations and what COVID was. And I got them through. Right. And so I got him through with a deal with FS2 for the next year. So and then that's when they were like, hey, do you want to be on the what's it called? Do you want to be on the executive committee? I was like, great. And so that was tough. I think I had to get on a lot of calls with a lot of men. Right. Who, you know, I will say after having come from medicine and because it's like ultimate frisbee people, they're a little bit more like progressive. I will say that I was really grateful that they gave me the power to lead. There were definitely outliers who, you know, gave me a little trouble. But for all intents and purposes, it was as easy as it could be because I think this group of people particularly had less qualms about hearing from a woman. There was a time where, you know, you're answering all these crazy questions and I feel bad and I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm very upfront, right? That somebody asked some ridiculous question and I think I laughed apparently on the call. Then I got a call from the commissioner saying, well, this male owner called me today and said he was pretty pissed at you for like chuckling. And I was like, I don't really care. I was like, I don't know. It sounds like a personal problem, Steve. And so I'm like, I'm trying to get this league through the pandemic. It's his business. Does he want me to try and save it or no? Right. So there's been a lot of that. So I feel like I have a lot of reason to be proud of what I've accomplished. And I am. I still recognize that there's a whole ton that I don't know. And I think what's gotten me through this is that like I said, I think I'm very blessed. I think that there are higher powers that help me through this, that it's not just me. But I think it's really a good combination of like being confident in yourself and like also being humble to know what you don't know, right? And having great support systems.
One more time, that special event you guys have coming up?
It is a preseason exhibition event presented by Summer Seat Crush, the New York Empire versus the Philadelphia Phoenix at Newman University. Gates and tailgate starts at 3:30.
And that's April 5th?
Saturday, April 5th.
Dr. Christina Lee Chung, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One on One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Dr. Christina Lee Chung, managing partner of the Philadelphia Phoenix, for being our guest this week and coming in studio to chat. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. You can follow the pod on X at One on One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.